Hey, Bible nerds, this is Dr. Manny Arango, and I'm your host for the Bible Department podcast powered by Arma. This podcast follows a Bible reading plan we created to help you read the entire Bible in a year. You can head to the show notes or thebibledepartment.com to download our reading plan and join the journey. Family, welcome to day 134. We got Deuteronomy chapter 31 and 34. We can say goodbye to Moses. My man about to die. No, I'm just playing. Well, he really is going to die. But, you know, let's not be flippant about it. You know, hey, if you've done the reading, shout out to you. I hope that my commentary on the reading is going to be helpful. If you haven't done the reading, make sure that you do the reading. These episodes are not designed to be a replacement for reading the Bible. They're supposed to help reading the Bible like happen easier. Okay. So the entire time we've kind of seen Moses, there's a big context clue. The entire time that we've seen Moses, we've seen him as priest and king. Deuteronomy chapter 32 is going to actually set Moses up to be a prophet. Okay. So now Moses is going to be prophet, priest, and king. And the only other person who's going to be someone who's going to hold all three of those offices are going to be Jesus. Okay, so prophet, priest, and king. And we're even going to see in this transition of power to Joshua that the text tells us, like, Joshua has the same spirit of Moses. Joshua is operating like Moses, but not fully. Actually, Joshua is going to almost take over king, but prophet and priest, not really. And so the high priest is going to get emphasized even more. And so the high priest and Joshua are both doing a lot of leading. So there's this tension in the text that Joshua's got the spirit of the Lord on him. The people, you can, like, if you're paying attention, there's all these parallels between Moses and Joshua, where the people are obeying Joshua, just like they obeyed Moses, even though they didn't really obey Moses. But on a literary level, that is what the text is trying to show you, that Moses has transferred authority and power and spirit to Joshua, and that Joshua is a new Moses. But at the same time, there hasn't been a prophet like Moses since Moses, is what the text is also going to say. So the next Moses is not Joshua, but Joshua, right? The next Moses is not the Joshua that precedes him, but the Joshua in the New Testament, which is going to be Jesus, okay? So Joshua's name translated would be Jesus, okay? So yeah, that's, I was going to like try to explain it. I'm like, there's not much explaining to do. I mean, Joshua in Hebrew is Jesus. Okay. So, all right, let me kind of like read through a lot of this. We're going to have Deuteronomy chapter 32 is going to be a song. It's going to be a song that's set up as witness. Now, what we're going to see in all these Hittite treaties, and I wish I had time to like read this stuff to you. We're going to find this a lot in these Hittite treaties, is that these lists of like I'm reading this treaty between Marsili and Dupitesib. Okay. That's like what I'm looking at on my screen right now. And historical background, stipulations, military clauses, and then it's going to have a summoning of divine witnesses. Whew! These things are long, guys. Okay. Behold, let the thousand gods stand by this oath. Let the thousand gods stand by for this oath. Let them observe and listen. Sun god of heaven, sun goddess of Arena, storm god of heaven, storm god of Hatti, and Mount Hazi, storm god of the gatehouse, storm god of the army, storm god of Halab, storm god of Zipalanda, storm god of Narika, storm god of Lizina, storm god of the ruined mound, storm god of Hissapa, storm god of Sapina, storm god of Sapinua. I mean, guys, it's just on and on and on and on. Tutelary god of Hatti, tutelary god of the field, moon god, lord of the oath, Habat, queen of heaven, I mean, it's on. I'm scrolling and it's just on and on and on. Rivers, springs, great sea, heavens and earth, winds, clouds. Let them be witnesses to this treaty and to the oath. Okay, so you get it. Yahweh has no gods that he can call as witness like that. Like these societies actually believe that these gods are real. Yahweh has no god that he can like call. He's not going to call any deities, but he is going to set up this song as witness. Okay. Which may seem like odd. Like how can a song be a witness? But what he's going to say is this: the people of Israel are going to forsake me. And when they forsake me and I chastise them and I discipline them, or I forsake them as a response to them forsaking me, they're going to blame me. And so Moses, I want you to establish this song that's going to be witness, that's going to prove that I am not the one who abandoned them, but they truly are the ones who abandoned me. Deuteronomy chapter 32 functions that way. This song is witness. In case the people of Israel ever think that Yahweh is the one who forsook them, this song is proof that it was indeed them who forsook Yahweh. So we don't get some long line of pagan witness after pagan witness after pagan witness after pagan witness after this god and that god and, you know, Enlil and Nenlil and Amunki and Amizadu. I mean, this is just god after god after god after god after goddess after goddess after goddess. What we do have is a poem. So let's kind of get into the song a little bit. We'll move into our nerdy nuggets. Deuteronomy chapter 32, verse 8. I actually want to kind of show you guys something in Deuteronomy chapter 32, verse 8. Says this: when the Most High gave the nations their inheritance, when he divided all mankind, he set up boundaries for the people according to the number of the sons of the NIV is going to say sons of Israel. Okay, I want to know what the NRSV is actually going to say for that same verse. It says, when the Most High apportioned the nations, when he divided humankind, he fixed the boundaries of the peoples according to the number of the gods. Okay, so this is not according to the number of the sons of Israel, but the sons of God, which the NRSV is translating as numbers, number of the gods. I want to know what ESV says. It says this: remember the days of old? Oh, no. When the Most High gave to the nations their inheritance, when he divided mankind, he fixed the borders of the people according to the number of the sons of God. Okay, so I just read three different translations. One said sons of Israel, one said sons of God, and one says just the gods. Okay, the actual Hebrew here is the sons of Elohim. And this opens up a whole bag of worms. It opens up a whole bag of worms because the sons of Elohim could mean the sons of Israel, okay? And that the tribes of Israel are going to rule over the nations. That's what it could mean. Or it could definitely mean the same sons of God as the sons of God in Genesis chapter 6. I'll like read that really quick, okay? Let's go to Genesis chapter 6. And it says this: when man began to multiply on the face of the land and the daughters were born in them, the sons of God saw that the daughters of man were attractive. They took as their wives any they chose. So this is angels, okay? These are angels. The sons of God here in Genesis 6 are angels who take human wives for themselves, and they create this super race of giants called the Nephilim, okay? Deuteronomy chapter 8 is actually seems like, Deuteronomy chapter 32, verse 8, seems like it's actually saying the same thing, but it adds a caveat. It says, when the Most High gave to the nations their inheritance, when he divided mankind, he fixed the borders of the people according to the numbers of the sons of God, so that the sons of God almost became principalities and powers over the nations. Okay, that the sons of God here, talking about angelic hosts, became guardian angels over nations. Okay, now that is opening up a whole can of worms. And if you've never heard that interpretation before, then you need to Google a man by the name of Michael Heiser. And you should probably read his book entitled The Unseen Realm. And I promise you, your mind will probably get blown. Because essentially, Michael Heiser is going to introduce this idea of the divine council, that the sons of God, that God doesn't only have human sons, but he also has angelic sons as well. And obviously, Lucifer was one of them. And that really, Lucifer is an orphan. And so, anyway, there's a lot of teaching on what I would call like the orphan spirit. And this is a massive part. If you just want to understand demons, angels, any of that stuff, I think The Unseen Realm by Michael Heiser would be a great start. And this stuff is right here in Deuteronomy chapter 32, verse 8. And I just didn't want to skip over it. Okay. This may be one of those passages that you would read and you wouldn't even realize that there's a whole can of worms ready to open right here. But anyway, I wanted to draw that to your attention just kind of as a nerdy nugget for the day. 32, verse 5. We're going to get callbacks. They have dealt corruptly, crooked and twisted. And this is callbacks to the flood. Let's keep moving. 32 verse 43 is going to be huge. 32 verse 43 is going to get meditated on by all the prophets. It's going to say this: rejoice with him, O heavens. Bow down to him, all gods. For he avenges the blood of his children. Huh? He avenges the blood of his children. Takes vengeance on his adversaries. What are you talking about? He repays those who hate him and cleanses his people's land. Okay, let's read it in the NIV. It says this, verse 43, rejoice, you nations, with his people, for he will avenge the blood of his servants. He will take vengeance on his enemies and make atonement for his land and people. Okay, this is going to set up, this one verse right here is going to set up a massive theme that Isaiah is going to pick up, what is going to be called the remnant or the righteous remnant. And Isaiah is going to take this and run with it and really create this theme called the suffering servant. Okay, this is going to create for he will avenge the blood of his servants. Who are these servants? And this is going to create this idea that within Israel, there's always going to be true Israel, which is a remnant, which is a righteous remnant. And there's always just going to be secular Israel. That Paul actually talks about this. Paul says that not all Israel is true Israel. Not all people who are circumcised outwardly are also circumcised inwardly, right? That there's an Israel, there's an ethnic Israel, and there's a true Israel. That what you need to realize is that the group that produces the biblical texts are not mainstream Israel. The group that produces the biblical text would be known as the righteous remnant. So you're going to see this when we get into the prophets really, really clearly, because the prophets are not popular. The prophets are not popular because the prophets are calling people back to what? Deuteronomy. They're calling people back to obeying the law, because prophecy is not primarily about foretelling the future. It's about forthtelling, not telling the future, but telling the truth. And the truth of the matter is that if you've broken the law, you need to return back to the law. Now, we're going to see as Moses dies and transfers power, we're going to see a duo. Okay, Moses and Joshua almost represent a duo, and they've been doing ministry together for decades. Okay, Moses and Joshua have appeared together since the book of Exodus. Okay, Moses and Joshua. It's actually going to set up this theme of intergenerational ministry. So the first is Moses and Joshua. The second is going to be David and Solomon. Okay, the third is going to be Elijah and Elisha. And then the last is going to be John the Baptist and Jesus. So by the time we get to the end of the book of Deuteronomy, we're going to get this big theme of like this transfer of leadership from Moses to Joshua. But the reality is that Moses and Joshua have kind of been a tag team, even more than Moses and Aaron. Like Moses and Joshua, they both come from different generations. Moses is older and Joshua's younger, but they are working together. And in the same way, David and Solomon, father and son, are kind of like a 1-2 punch. Like David buys the land that the temple will be built on, but Solomon is actually the one who builds the temple. Same is true with Elijah and Elisha. that there is a chemistry, camaraderie, a love, a father-son kind of relationship, whether it's spiritual or literal. And this is prefiguring John the Baptist as the forerunner, who is the new Elijah, and Jesus as the person who is being forerun for. Okay. By the way, the temptation narratives are going to link back to Deuteronomy as Jesus is in the wilderness. He is going to quote Deuteronomy over and over and over. But let me kind of outline the temptations for you a little bit. So again, it's another nerdy nugget. In temptation number one, Jesus has to overcome his desire to eat. And that way he is the new Adam. Here we go. The devil took him to the holy city and had him stand on the highest point of the temple. If you're the Son of God, he said, throw yourself down. Okay. But Jesus said, you know, do not put the Lord your God to the test. Remember, the Bible says, this is Yahweh talking to Moses, said, Israel's tested me these 10 times in the wilderness. Okay. So the fact that Jesus is quoting saying, I will not put the Lord my God to the test means he's also the new Israel. So as he's in the wilderness for 40 days and 40 nights facing off with the enemy, he has to become the new and better Adam. He has to become the new and better Israel. And then the last one, okay? Again, the devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their splendor. All this I will give you if you just bow down and worship me. Away from me, Satan, for it is written, worship the Lord your God and serve him only. This is Jesus being the new king and prophet. All throughout the rest of the story, the kings and the prophets are going to be in this tumultuous relationship with each other. Their relationship is designed for accountability, but the kings are going to be wicked. We're going to see that over and over and over again. And so Jesus not going after fame and glory is actually going to prove that he is the new, fulfilled, perfect, blameless king and prophet. So he's a new Adam. He's a new Israel. He's a new king and prophet. Let me kind of go over my timeless truth with you guys. We have a natural human tendency to blame God for our consequences of our sin, which seems ridiculous, but it's real and it's true. The song of witness in Deuteronomy chapter 32 is not just for Israel, but it's actually for us as well. Because in the middle of pain, in the middle of our consequence, we would love, it's human nature to blame God and say, why have you forsaken me? It's funny. I was actually counseling someone recently. It's a really sad story. This guy, younger than me, got diagnosed with HIV, AIDS. And he got diagnosed with AIDS, HIV and AIDS because of sexually promiscuous activity. And in the middle of us talking, he's like angry at God. Why would God let me get sick with this? I'm young. You know what I mean? I have my whole life ahead of me. I'm only 30. I'm barely 30. You know, I just can't believe God would do this. And there's a part of me that wants to go, you sinned. Like, what are we talking? God didn't do anything. You sinned. You sinned against God. How can you be mad at God when you are not blameless here? And there's this natural human tendency to, even in the middle of our sin, still want to blame anyone but us. And so God sets up this song as a witness. He's going to say, I know people, I know humans, but I also know these people. And I know that they're going to be upset. They're going to feel forsaken by me. They're going to feel abandoned by me. And I'm going to set up Deuteronomy 32 as a song and as a witness to remind them that it was not me who forsook you, but it was you who forsook me. And I think that's something that we all have to take to heart, because it's easy to be mad at God for the consequences of our own sin. And it's easier to hold up a microscope to God and almost interrogate him for the things that he didn't do or that he allowed to happen, instead of holding up a mirror to our own heart and our own soul and our own actions and our own motives and judging ourselves. All right, guys, that's the end of the book of Deuteronomy. Book of Deuteronomy ends with Moses essentially getting buried. And there's this cool little verse that says, to this day, we don't know where he's buried, which means that the book of Deuteronomy probably didn't come into its final form like in the time of Moses. to this day means that a long time has elapsed from the time where Moses was actually alive, which gets into authorship and a whole other can of worms that I'm not gonna deal with. I'm gonna open it and let you deal with that. Anyway, all right, family, that's the entire Torah. We did the first 5 books of the Bible. I'm proud of you for being on this journey. We did Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. That's no small feat. And so tomorrow we turn our face and we get into the book of Joshua. We're going to cross the Jordan. We're going to get into the land of Canaan. I think it's going to be great. I can't wait to study the book of Joshua with you and the rest of the Old Testament. It's going to be good. I'm so proud of you. If you're on a streak, don't break it. We got a couple more books of the Bible. You know what I'm saying? We got to keep doing this. We got 200 and something days to go as we go through the Bible this year. If not on a streak, I think today's a good day to start one. All you need is 2 days and you'll be on a streak. I love you guys. Like always, I'll see you right here tomorrow as we get into the book of Joshua. I love you. Peace. Thank you so much for joining me on the Bible Department Podcast. If this episode was helpful, it would mean the world to me if you'd give us a follow, rate and review the show, and don't forget to share. You can learn more about the show at thebibledepartment.com and find us on Instagram at The Bible Department. If you want to dive deeper into the Bible, you can get free access to our library of courses at thebibledepartment.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow. What if I told you that what you're learning in this video was just the tip of the iceberg? The Bible Department is actually powered by Arma. What is Arma? I'm so glad you asked. Arma is an online subscription-based platform that we designed to help people, everyday people, learn the Bible for themselves. We started Arma so that anybody, anywhere, could have access to trustworthy and entertaining Bible and theology content. In addition to this podcast, we have over 60 courses on individual books of the Bible, on theology topics, and on some hot topics like homosexuality, tithing, and women in ministry. But really, Arma is a community of people that I've gotten to know, a community where thousands of people are currently finding family, asking questions, and nerding out on the Bible together. If you want a community to read the Bible with you this year, or if you want to dive into some deeper theological content, or if you want more exclusive access to me and the entire Arma team, how about you go to thebibledepartment.com. I'll be sure to post the link in the description of this video. Let's make this your year to become a Bible nerd.